This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be about absent parents. I am joined by Barrister Nicola Frost from Three Paper Buildings Chambers in London. Nicola is a specialist family law barrister and she is described as being feisty but fair with a great attention to detail. Nicola is well rehearsed at dealing with sensitive family matters and she also undertakes court of protection cases. Thank you so much for joining us, Nicola.
Hello, Hattie. Thanks very much for having me.
Yes, it's lovely to have you. And I have to say that this is quite a serious topic, and I was just mentioning that to you, I think, before we press record, that it's quite serious, because when we were doing the research behind the numbers of, well, what do we mean by absent parents, what kind of numbers exist with absent parents, some of the statistics that we found were quite shocking. But let's first of all talk about, what do we mean by the term an absent parent, Nicola? What are we saying?
Well, an absent parent is quite simply a parent who is absent from the life of their children. That could be a mother or a father who has departed the family and no longer chooses to engage in that child's life.
Yes.
It's a very sad situation.
Yes, no, absolutely. I mean, it's as simple as that. It literally means absent as a parent. I mean, the Gingerbread Charity has reported that there are around 1.8 million single parents, which make up nearly a quarter of families in the UK. I have to say, when I saw that, I thought a quarter of families in the UK are single parent family, and 97% of single parent families are mothers. I found that very interesting as well.
Yes, that often is the case, that it ends up being the father who has left the family. For a variety of reasons, relationships break down and the father is no longer part of the child's life. Sometimes they choose not to be part of the child's life. Sometimes they feel that they don't have a choice but not to be part of the child's life. And often with these kinds of cases, one side will be saying, he's left or she's left and isn't part of my child's life, and I really, really feel sorry for my children. But often on the other side, the other parent will be saying, I felt that I had no choice and I have had to leave, or that they are being prevented from having a relationship with their child.
Yes.
It's a really difficult situation for those people.
Absolutely. I mean, like they say, there's always two sides to a story. And, you know, I think that both sides should always be heard and is always heard in the courts for sure. I mean, the Office of National Statistics has quoted that around 13% of non-resident fathers have reported to never see their children. I mean, that equates to around one in five fathers in the UK that are the non-resident parent. Don't see their children at all. And as you quite rightly pointed out, there's always it could be a vast number of reasons why. But yes, I mean, let's talk about a family that obviously where there is an absent parent. One of the things that I do hear as a question come up quite often from clients is, can my ex be forced to have contact with our child?
In a word, no. Unfortunately, unless the parent who is absent wants to be part of that child's life, then he or she cannot be made to have contact with the child. And Hattie, I know you'll be aware that there's a real effect on children of not having one parent around. And if a child is missing a parent, that does have an effect on them. And it clearly has an effect on the resident parent, because they're having to compensate for two parents. And I'm not saying that every family will suffer because of an absent parent, because sometimes there are very good reasons for a parent not to be in the child's life. But the children are the ones who suffer the most by having that emotional turmoil going on inside of them.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, even through sort of divorces and breakups where, you know, adults get so engaged in their own emotions and the reasons of the breakdown. And I often say to clients, look, you know, it has to be about the children. What's best for the children? To stop That's and right. think about how your actions are affecting the children. And I have to say, Nicola, that I just don't feel enough adults sometimes sit down and think about what's best for the child. I've seen it a lot where adults are taking actions without thinking about, well, how is this going to affect my child really? You know, what kind of negative effect is this going to have? I mean, if the parent that remains, let's talk about an absent parent here, the parent that remains in the child's life, do they have greater parental rights over their child than their ex is, if the ex is absent from the child's life?
Well, look, there's two ways of looking at this. In the round, you're, by definition, if one parent isn't around, then clearly you are going to have more rights on a day-to-day basis, in inverted commas, I put the rights, on a day-to-day basis, because you will be choosing what your child is doing for that day. You'll be communicating with the school. You'll be the one taking them to medical appointments and the like. But legally, no, you don't get extra rights by virtue of being the only resident parent and that other parent being absent. So I know that you will have covered this in other podcasts where you have there is parental responsibility for both parents. The mother automatically gets parental responsibility, come what may. If the father is married to the mother at the time of the child's birth, he automatically gets parental responsibility. But if they're not married to the mother and they are named on the birth certificate, they also have automatic parental responsibility. So it's not something that can just be extinguished in these circumstances. So, for example, if you were thinking about doing anything like moving somewhere into a different country, for example, you really ought to be talking to your ex about that. Or if you wanted, say you got into a new relationship, you became married and you assume responsibility of the new husband's name, then you might also want to change your child's name. That is something that you really ought to get permission to do before you do it.
I mean, I hear what you're saying, Nicola, but I think, you know, it can be very difficult if there's an absent parent for the remaining parent to try and dig that person out for whatever reason that they're absent for, and say, oh, I just need you to approve this. In reality, it just doesn't happen. It's so difficult. It's difficult, isn't it?
Yes, I see that. I mean, it is a very, very difficult situation because we're all human. And if you are the person who has the child, sole responsibility for the child on a day-to-day basis, and your partner doesn't want anything, or your ex-partner, sorry, doesn't want anything to do with your child, that is not just emotionally damaging for the child. It's emotionally damaging for you as the resident parent. It's a really, really challenging situation. And obviously, I have to talk about what the law is and yes. what we ought to do.
Yes.
I fully appreciate that if I, you know, if you're living that situation, it is a very different thing, but that is the law. And really, those are decisions that ought to be made jointly between people who have
yes. parental responsibility. So just on the parental responsibility points, what we are saying is that if you're not married to the father of the child at the time you have the child and the father is not named on the birth certificate, then they do not automatically have parental responsibility.
That's right.
One of the things that should be cleared up. The other point is that you can, if you have moved on in your life and you're now with a new partner, you can make an application to the court for your new partner to have parental responsibility over your child. If your new partner has a great relationship with your child, one that, you know, the child feels absolutely happy and content with and you feel absolutely happy and content with.
That's absolutely right. Yes, you can. You can make that application, and the right course is to go through the court process. But I know it happens regularly, and, you know, people make changes in their child's lives, and that's what happens in everyday life. But that is what ought to happen, is it ought to be an application through the court.
Yes, to do things properly and make sure it's official as well. I mean, that's really important, because there's one thing making the day-to-day decisions of how you're living and your child's decisions or children's decisions if the parent is totally absent. But there's another thing doing things so that they're set in stone and they're properly done. Okay, so we've got this absent parent, and it could be the mother, it could be the father, but whatever the absent parent is, they're absent. What if the ex decides they want to be part of the child's life again after a substantial amount of time, and you're worried about the effect that the absent parent's inconsistency is going to have on your child's well-being? Can you say no to the contact? Can you say to them, go make an application to the court? I mean, I know there's lots of variables here, i.e. the age of the child, how long the parent's probably been absent for, et cetera, et cetera. But what are we talking about here in terms of the default general position?
So obviously every situation, every family situation is different. But if you're, my first response, if somebody came and said, after several years, I suddenly want to be part of my child's life again, you'd want to do that in a very, very careful way. Now, if it's just that they've left the family and there weren't any safeguarding concerns, you might want to gradually reintroduce the partner, if you're happy to do that, to the child, and do things in a slow, measured fashion, in a child-focused, measured fashion that is in their best interest, because the child is the focus of everything, and it's not about the parents' relationship.
Absolutely.
It's about the child and their parents'
Absolutely.
Relationship. So whatever the circumstances, providing there were no safeguarding concerns, I would suggest a slow reintroduction of contact. We're not talking about suddenly appearing on the doorstep and then having overnight stays immediately, because that would probably shock the child, and it would be an unusual situation. It's not good for anybody for that to happen. If, however, there are safeguarding concerns, you know, the breakup could have been quite messy.
Or domestic violence or abuse could have been a part of it. Yeah.
Exactly. Messy and domestic abuse. Exactly. Those situations, I would say that you're right, well within your rights to say absolutely no to contact. And it may be something more subtle. You might be concerned about what the ex will do. If there's a foreign element, are you concerned about potential of removing the child from this jurisdiction, for example?
Yes.
There are lots of things, and I'm not trying to put things into people's heads, but you know your ex and you know what concerns you might have. You also know your child better than anybody else does in the world. So you know what will be best for them. Now, if there was domestic abuse, if you're concerned about the safety of your child, whether it be emotional or physical potential harm to your child, then I think there's real grounds for just saying no. But what you can't do is you can't prevent the ex from making an application to the court. And so you would be faced with an application. The court then gets involved. And the first thing that happens when anybody makes an application in private law children, which is what this element would be called, CAFCAS, they are the independent body who report to the court on children matters. They call both parties and they have a safeguarding conversation, and one side will say their version of events and the other side will say their version of events. CAFCAS does police checks and then it checks whether there's any involvement of social services, that kind of thing. And then they write a letter to the court, and that letter will be produced for the court at a first hearing. And then the court is appraised there of any potential safeguarding issues that need to be considered.
Yes. And then, there's a process. I mean, I have to say, I as much as I always try to say, look, mediation, try to resolve things amicably, et cetera, I do think that in cases where there's been an absent parent, you know, it's not a normal thing to do in life, is it? It's not normal to have a child and just say, I think I'll just disappear for a few years, because it's not the, you know, you're just not taking responsibility for being a parent. I'm not saying there aren't reasons that could be out of the control of either party for doing that. Of course there are. However, if somebody turns up, your ex turns up and says, right, I want to be a part of the child's life, and they're not doing it, as you quite rightly said, in a measured approach, an approach that's child focused and taking in consideration what's right for the child. I mean, clearly it's likely that tensions were high, or there was tension there, because it's a breakup that took place in some shape or form. But the courts, you know, do their best to assist. They do their best to assess CAFCAS's report, which is completely independent from both parties. And it's a starting point. It's a starting point for the court to say, right, this is what an independent body is saying to me. Because I think one of the things that's important for people to remember is the court doesn't know either party. And I've seen it before where, you know, our client would get really upset and say, well, why would the court do that? Why would they think that? Why do they want that information? This is what I'm saying. And I always say, the court, the judge doesn't know you personally, didn't live your situation, didn't live your life. The same goes for your ex. So the court has to have information that's independent of everybody that's coming to court, plus information from everybody where you'll give opportunity to give your witness statement to explain in your own words, this is what's going on, this is my side of the story, in order to make the best judgment that's the best option for the child. And I think that the courts, you know, and they do speed up applications, child applications, particularly if there's any concern, any serious concerns of either parent or CAFCAS. The court will do their best to hear these applications as quickly as possible.
Yes, and it's important to note, Hattie, that the law presumes that it is likely to be in the children's best interest to have the input and the involvement of both of their parents in their lives. That's the presumption that they start from, and that it will further their welfare to have both parents in their life. And that's the starting point. There is a practice direction that covers domestic abuse. And the court, when hearing about allegations of domestic abuse, that practice direction is triggered. And that means that the court has to look at the allegations and decide whether or not these are allegations that would prevent contact moving forward, or whether they need to be investigated, or if safeguards can be put in place. Sometimes you'll hear of people having contact in supervised settings, And that is because they are able to have limited contact. The child is in a safe place being supervised or supported, but they are having a meaningful relationship with their parent. And sometimes it's not appropriate ever to stop that supervision, but sometimes the court will go through a process, hear the various allegations and make findings or not. And then if there are findings, we look at how we can safely have contact. And if there are not findings, then the system is binary. That means the allegations that were made were not true, and therefore contact can move forward. And it's very likely that the court will be advised by either a CAFCAS officer or an independent social work assessment.
Yes.
Those.
Yes, no, indeed. And, you know, the child's emotional welfare and emotional well-being and well-being is paramount. It is the most important thing. So, and what the child also wants is taken into consideration as well. And this, and let me just say, this isn't where one parent has told their child, you are not to see the other parent, you know, because CAFCAS and social services, you know, these are trained individuals coming in to assess a child's wishes and feelings, actually, is I think how the court refers to it. And a child's wishes and feelings, particularly if the child is, you know, an older child, you know, a teen, a 13, a 14, even 12. I mean, children of even sort of 9, 10 years old are very, very smart. And they certainly do know what they want these days.
It depends on the child, actually.
Yeah, it does. Well.
Various children. Yeah, I think anything above 8 is a potential. And I'm putting an age on it, and that's really wrong. It really depends on
it. Does. It does depend on the child. You know, I've seen bossy girls at the age of 5 strutting around playgrounds, and I've seen, you know, boys of 10 years old who are not so sure about certain things. So it just does depend on the age of the child. But the court, if required, the court will more than likely take into consideration, into great consideration, the wishes and feelings of the child, particularly if that child has not actually had any relationship with them, with the absent parent, because they were very young when the absent parent decided to be absent, let's say, or was kept away, because it could be both, you know, either or situation, and they may not even remember who their parent was.
And that relationship needs to be built from nothing. And it's important to know it's the ascertainable wishes and feelings of a child. And it is just one factor that the court will consider. But as you say, if a child is 12, 13, 14, their wishes and feelings are probably going to have a bit more weight than somebody who's a child that's much younger. But certainly in reports that I've seen, the ascertainable wishes and feelings might be about how they react to the other parent in contact if they are a much younger child. But clearly they're not determinative in those circumstances.
Yes. Well, I have to say, Nicola, it's been a great conversation, but that's all we have time for. I told you it goes very quickly. It goes far, far too quickly. And there's certainly space for a part two. Absolutely, I'd say, because it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Hattie. Could I just say one final thing?
Of course you can.
Just very to make it absolutely clear that the courts can make orders at various stages of proceedings, and they have to take an active role in case management. So we need to make sure that what is before the court is going to make have an effect on contact if there are allegations. But it could be that the court says no, these aren't allegations that are determinative of contact, so therefore we can move forward to the next stage now, and then court proceedings are over much sooner than otherwise they might be.
Yes. Or
and court, kind of outside of court, of course, as well.
No, of course. Absolutely. I mean, if there's an opportunity to open get a dialogue going with the absent parent to be able, for the benefits of the child, that should always be considered. And courts can also make orders that would take you up to the next hearing or the next stage. So as an interim order.
Yes.
In order to help and assist matters. So, no, that's all very, very, very helpful. Thank you ever so much.
It's been so lovely to talk to you, Hattie. Thank you.
And what I will say to our listeners is don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. And you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.